The sell-off was reaction to last week's 236-point drop in the Dow. The result, the Nikkei average was down 260 yen. And from there to Wall Street, where the numbers speak for themselves. Unofficially, the Dow stands at 1738.41, a drop of more than 508 points. Proof, as Alec Roberts reports, that the panic hit a fevered pitch.
From the opening bell, the market was in free fall. After last Friday's record 108-point loss, analysts had expected a rally. Instead,
everybody, we're trying to find a bottom. We're trying to, you know, I'm, as a floor broker, I see stocks trading 10 points below where they traded Thursday, and I'm saying this has to be the bottom. And then they trade 5 points lower than that.
By noon, the market was down about 150 points, the tape delayed by more than an hour. But it only got worse as trading brokers struggled to cope with a blizzard of sell orders.
Not a good day in history, especially for investors. Well, let's stay musically in 1987. This was a top 20 hit in the UK. Solo material by Julian Cope. He had been in a band called The Teardrop Explodes. Went solo in 87. This also became an early MTV song. Called World Shut Your Mouth on Cruisin' the Decades.
Yeah. hearing a 100-year journey through the history of recorded music from an extensive, obsessive record collection belonging to Radio's Brad Savage. This is Cruisin' the Decades, heard on the greatest independent radio stations across North America and the world. 100 years of music on Cruisin' the Decades, Global Edition.
Of 90s alt rock. In the Meantime by Space Hog from 1995. cruising the decades, over 100 years of music. And I once saw Space Hog on the so-called Brotherly Love Tour. Bands with brothers like the Black Crowes, Oasis, and Space Hog. There's been all this buzz about the Oasis reunion shows, and we've got a live recording from their recent show in Dublin that will play in just a few minutes here. CruisingTheDecades.com. All of our shows and playlists are available on demand. And now we step forward into the 21st century. We'll go to 2008 for this one, a real disco and club indie type song. This is the band called Cut Copy, formed in Melbourne, Australia, the project of Mr. Dan Whitford. This was a pretty sizable hit for them in 2008. Hearts on Fire from Cut Copy on Cruisin' the Decades.
studios of the Summit.fm in Akron, Ohio, USA. This is Cruisin' the Decades with Brad Savage.
By the mid-2010s, this four-piece came out of Frankenmuth, Michigan, home of the world's largest year-round Christmas store. And this band is called Greta Van Fleet. Heavy 70s English rock influence, heavy Led Zeppelin influence. In fact, a lot of people jokingly called them Greta Van Zeppelin when they came out. Listen for the similarities. This is Greta Van Fleet. I'm cruising the decades. In the decades. That was released in 2017. So that brings us up to the 2020s, and a real recent cool buzz artist coming out of Dublin, Ireland, C-Matt. Her name is Sierra Mary Alice Thompson, or C-Matt, an Irish singer-songwriter, and kind of doing this thing called Euro Country, kind of like country meets dance club with vibrant colors and uplifting themes and styles. Very critically acclaimed. She had a big set at Glastonbury 2025. She is nominated for a Brit Award and the prestigious Mercury Prize. This is C-Matt. And the song is called When a Good Man Cries on Cruisin' the Decades.
I waited for love with a cricket bat. It flies. You know what I'm like. You don't deserve it. Baruch assault. Her justice. She kept it.
definitely an artist to watch. That is CMAT, When a Good Man Cries, 2025. This is actually her third album already. It's cruising the decades, over 100 years of music, heard on great independent radio stations worldwide. A salute to listeners on the gamut in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, plus listeners at Indiana Public Radio from Muncie, Indiana, broadcasting from Ball State University. And fun fact, their studios are in the David Letterman Communications and Media Building on campus at Ball State. Also, hello to listeners in Roatan, Honduras, and Blue Wave Radio, 101.1 FM, English language adult alternative music for the expats in Roatan. Truly an island paradise. They hear us all around the world, and they've heard all about the Oasis reunion shows. This is one of the biggest stories in music, and I've got a recording from Oasis in Dublin, Ireland, when they played on August 16, 2025. Here's what Oasis sounds like live in 25. This is Cruising the Decades.
Where would we all be without Wonderwall, eh? Where would we be? Selling carpets. Now
what we definitely needed in 2025 is an Oasis reunion. That was recorded in Dublin, Ireland in August. And now we've done it. Over 100 years of music. Find all the playlists and listen on demand at cruisinthedecades.com.
Over 100 years of music history. In the course of just 1 hour, you've been listening to Cruisin' the Decades with Brad Savage. This is the global edition produced for shortwave, FM, and AM stations worldwide on the leading independent community and music radio stations on the planet. This program originates at WAPS-FM, The Summit, in Akron, Ohio, USA. For correspondence or QSL, contact brad@thesummit.fm. Thank you for supporting independent, eclectic radio broadcasting and signals over the air from all corners of planet Earth. One broadcast to an audience of many, simultaneously. A shared listening experience. Radio and 100 years of music. Join us next time for the global edition of Cruisin' the Decades.
What is dementia? Is it the same as Alzheimer's? If someone has memory loss, does that mean they have dementia? Millions of Americans ask these questions every day. Hello, I'm Kevin Jameson, volunteer and president of the Dementia Society of America. Please request our free guide filled with facts about dementia and ways you can keep your brain as healthy as possible. Go to 1-800-DEMENTIA.org or call 1-800-DEMENTIA. You want to live your life to the fullest, and we can help.
You are listening to The Sound of Language on WRCT Pittsburgh, produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
Oh my gosh, they drained that.
Mm-hmm. What?
The fountain, it's completely drained. I've never seen the bottom of it. I didn't realize it was all concrete. They do a good job of making it look...
Making it look real.
Yeah. It's so faux. Wow.
Hello, this is artist Ginger Brooks Takahashi. Last week, I took my class, Contextual Practice Seminar, on a walk from campus down into Schenley Park. And we were going to see my permanent public artwork, Drip Seep Run. And we walked out of Hall of Arts.
I'm noticing ginkgo nets on the ground.
I came out here with Britt Branson's class.
Mm-hmm.
My like first few weeks at CMU.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched a bug for an hour. We had to find a bug and then follow it. And then if we lost it, I had to find another one. Keep going.
That's a great assignment.
Down Tech Street to Schenley Drive, and so you'll hear the sounds of us walking on the sidewalk and noticing different things along the way. I had the students read two different texts in preparation for this site visit. So one of the texts is called Notes for Noticing, and it's a piece that I wrote with my collaborator, Dana Bishop Root, as General Sisters. And we created this in 2021, and it was for a show at Tufts University. Notes for Noticing is an invitation for moving and observing in a place where you have been before, to connect with knowledge that is part of your histories, your feelings, and those that are with you. Place yourself in the place where you are, with all that you are, connecting with the knowledge that is part of your history in present tense. Collective knowledge, collecting knowledges. Who is with you? Where were you the last time you were moving through this path? Who named you? Who named this plant as a weed when we have known all along it is medicine? In this time, observation is your wealth. In this time, your senses connect the present to your histories of knowing. In this time, what do you want? In this time, find yourself in relation to. Noticing notes. The sound of your foot connecting with the ground. The scale of yourself in relation to what is rooted in the ground. What is left over from the season before? What is sprouting in the present tense? The seeds being released, your knowing of this tree, your knowing of its bark, touch, and its knowing of you, touch. Touching the length of a stem, tracing the outline of a leaf through all their seasons. Which death is a part, and therefore life? We have learned the trees are in communication with each other, with water, with soil, with microbes, from their root structures, their entanglements, and the space in between. With an inhale, your lungs welcome what you know.
Did Charlie ever take you on the walk through Brick Park Cemetery?
No. Okay. Has Charlie taken you?
Yes. No. That's his go-to.
Okay.
Occasionally.
For having a conversation.
Yes, yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's got many a generation of people. So.
Oh, so you like looked at the
We just
names.
Like walk around because they have like the Egyptian inspired graves and mausoleums. Uh-huh. And it's quite astonishing how it yeah. is.
There's trying
to look at the cemetery that's
in Greenfield.
Oh yeah.
Never seen
that. The second text that I assigned to the students to read is Genealogy of Site Specificity by Miwon Kwan. It was published in 2002, and for me it's been an important text for thinking about a site-responsive or a site-reflexive art practice. She talks about the history of site specificity, and I'll just go ahead and read a little bit of the introduction because in the walk, the students refer to this text, and I think it's important to have a sense of what they're referring to. Site specificity used to imply something grounded, bound to the laws of physics. Often playing with gravity, site-specific works used to obstinate about presence, even if they were materially ephemeral, and adamant about immobility, even in the face of disappearance or destruction. Whether inside the white cube or out in the Nevada desert, whether architectural or landscape-oriented, site-specific art initially took the site as an actual location, a tangible reality in its identity, composed of a unique combination of physical elements. Length, depth, height, texture, and shape of walls and rooms, scale and proportion of plazas, buildings, or parks. Existing conditions of lighting, ventilation, traffic patterns, distinctive topographical features, and so forth. If modernist sculpture absorbed its pedestal base to sever its connection to or express its indifference to the site, rendering itself more autonomous and self-referential, thus transportable, placeless, and nomadic, then site-specific works, as they first emerged in the wake of minimalism in the late 60s and early 70s, forced a dramatic reversal of this modernist paradigm. Antithetical to the claim, if you have to change a sculpture for a site, there's something wrong with the sculpture, site-specific art, whether interruptive or simulative, gave itself up to its environmental context, being formally determined or directed by it. So that last part, giving itself an artwork giving itself up to its environmental context and being formally determined or directed by it is a huge part of what I think of as site responsive. And it's how I began my process and how I continue to think about how to create an artwork that is in relationship to a site, whether it's visible or invisible aspects of the site. So, let's go on a walk.
I got really drawn to all the shale piles.
Yeah.
It's all over in this park, and it's actually one of the rocks that I used in my piece.
Oh.
Yeah.
I sourced it from
nearby, but it was a huge effort to figure out how to bring it here. This was the first time I worked at this scale where it was things that were that I couldn't physically move. So it involved hiring a truck with a, what is it called? An arm that like lifts your thing.
Hydraulic lift?
A crane. I had to hire a crane operator to come and move the piece in, and then I had to hire somebody with a dump truck to come and pick up all the shale and then bring it here. And get all the permissions for all of that, too.
You hired me.
Well, at one point, I did think about just getting a basket, and with I got a backpack basket, and I was like, well, I could just move, like, 5 loads a day, and maybe I can do it by myself. And this could be part of the piece.
Yeah, it would be more like durational.
Yes.
Oh, I like the root system on that tree. It's really nice.
Yeah.
They're all like wrapping over each other.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful, the color. Describe it.
It's sunset, golden hour. Yeah. Yes. Photolingo. Golden hour. If you're into portrait photography, right now would be a great time to take pictures.
Very moody.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing how our image is reflected and where it's like staring back at us.
Oh, yeah.
It's so
the shadows.
Vertical. It's like a movie.
Yeah. And it's almost like to scale.
Yeah.
With my little eye, one thing was.
Yeah.
I'm thinking a lot about rocks. I'm just paying attention to the sound of our foot on feet on rocks. Like the earth is made of rocks. This is the thing that will forever be present. And like, yeah, the stairs and everything, they were carved out of rocks. And it's like, yeah, I feel like I'm in a big rock right now.
So does that
with a little bit of other living things around, but it's a big rock. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say. So does that mean that all art can be considered site specific, right? Yeah. Kind of.
That's how I felt reading that.
Yeah.
I was like, well, if you expand this. It's all
site-specific
work. Yeah, same for everybody. Yeah,
which takes away the whole point of using that as a definition.
Yeah, if everything is from rock and from, I guess, earth.
Yeah.
In my mind.
But then the word is your site for making us. Like, yeah. Everything is odd.
Yeah, but they were saying in the article that if you think about discourse as a site, or if you think about history as a site, or if you think about like if you redefine what can be interpreted as site, mm-hmm. then suddenly site specific is anything that isn't, I don't know, like full commodity,
mm-hmm.
or a discrete object,
right,
in a space that the artist doesn't intend to have any relationship.
Well, even then,
I know,
as long as it has some sort of specificity to
something, then according to that article, it would be site specific.
Oh, drain water.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. So that's a uncovered like
part of our drainage system. So throughout the park, you'll see like probably what you'll see up there at the top of the road. I know exactly where it is. There is a grading. And the stream runs under the road, and then it comes down here, and it probably goes under here. Probably drains somewhere over there.
So it's like a culvert, but small.
Exactly.
Yep.
Why is that?
Because it's clay. It's cracked probably because it's clay, and something hit it, and it broke it. Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's what the little pottery pieces you saw are.
Maybe.
You saw pottery pieces on this walk already?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you gotta pay attention. So is walking a significant part of your practice?
It became part of it since I started. I mean, it's part of how it's one pace and one mode for me, like moving through the world. And it became more significant in my practice when I started making these public artworks. And because I was placing them in locations that maybe felt more like a destination for some people. And so the question of how do people arrive to it? How do people find it? And then do I organize walks as part of it? And then I started thinking about how to think about disability and walking, and I started to consider other words for walk, even that was more inclusive of different kinds of movement. And so the word that I arrived at was amble.
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 Which is kind of like a slow walk or a meander.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And
more about the journey.
Yes. Yeah. So here, we're at a crossroads, and we're going to go down. I didn't know this was called the Ponticulus Trail, but we're going to go down to the Ponticulus Trail, and then we're going to go down to the Lake Trail. So we're going further down into Panther Hollow. And it's named that because there were actual panthers here at one point.
Back to that.
Ambling is like really deeply tied to spirituality. I'm taking Asian architecture class right now, and a lot of the Buddhist temples are designed so you can circumambulate within them.
Totally.
So basically means you just walk around in circles and meditate.
Yeah, walking meditation.
Can I ask you whether you have your own definition of site-specific that you think encompasses either more or less than another?
Yes. Yes. Maybe we'll...
Water sounds.
Yeah, there's some water sounds. I will definitely answer that question and add to it. About my own definition of site specificity, and I guess what I want to throw back to you all is that so Kwan in her essay outlines genealogy of site specificity outlines these three different paradigms, right? The phenomenological, the discursive, and the institutional. So I think and she goes into it and says that like a lot of works mix up all those things, right? So I'd be curious, after you all see the piece, which aspects, which paradigms you see present or at play in the piece.
So before you answer our question.
I see what you're doing.
Okay. But well, what I will say is that I do like the words. I do like the word site specificity, site specific, and I do use it to talk about my practice. I also like to use the word site reflexive, and reflexive as in like turning back on itself to think about the site as also activated, and how through the artwork I can ask questions of the site, and the site can ask questions of itself.
Interesting. That feels to me more like the original intended site-specific definition that they were speaking of in the, beginning of the piece.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, an important aspect of site specificity to return to at least somewhat once you've expanded, right? That there is something very special about the idea of the environment and the artwork in conversation.
Yes.
Very specifically.
Yes.
And not just the artwork in conversation with something in any environment. Right? I feel like that was, that felt like it was being lost to me in the article.
Okay.
As it was expanded, even though in my own practice, I was like, oh yeah, now, like, yeah, I do have discourse, site discourse, and.
Yeah, so you were identifying with it.
It opened up some talk for you.
Hey, Annie, do you see that?
That dead tree with all the rocks underneath it that are, like, holding it up?
Yes.
It's pretty cool. Especially because the rocks have almost this, like, platform-like quality to them.
Does something smell good, Alina?
No, it's just nature, and I'm part of the nature. I'm just...
So beautiful.
Very beautiful.
Nature, nature, take me as your bride. Virginia Woolf's Orlando.
I don't even have a response to that.
Further.
Erosion of rock?
Yeah. Try to prevent it from going to, like, bring down the hill.
The dirt around the rocks.
I lived on a creek as a kid. Our house backed right up to it. And they were like, one day this creek will be all the way to your back porch. But it was like 35 feet away from the house. It was crazy.
We also had a creek in our old house that when there was a big storm and flash floods, all of the runoff from the like suburban sprawl roads would funnel down into our creek. And because our house... Our house didn't back up onto the creek, but it was the same level as the creek in the basement. And then it was built into a hill, and we would get 3 feet of water in our basement.
Wow.
really bad. And we sold it just in time.
Yeah.
To not have to put that on the Zillow listing. But that's real. These stone walls that we're walking on right now prevent the creek from changing position over time.
Yeah.
So you can do that if you have a creek in your backyard. That wood makes a really nice instrument.
Thank you. Wyatt's first reaction was, this is cool.
Thanks for sharing that. So the two kinds of rock that I chose to use here are both from this area. It's called the Allegheny Plateau. And so there's the slabs, which are almost like 5 feet long, and they're made out of sandstone. And then underneath them, and like where we're standing, that's the shale. And you can see it up here too. And it's also covering a lot of the part that I dug up that has all the pipes, that has holes in it, that's collecting all the water. So yeah, this piece is called Drip Seep Run, and I applied to the city of Pittsburgh, had this call for artists, and I applied. I said I was interested, and they didn't require a proposal, which was great because that part takes so much time. And as I started to spend time in the park and learn about the park, I had already been working with human connections to water through this other project, and I was curious about springs. And so I was learning about where springs are in the park, and it was winter time. And I was working with a geologist, and I asked him, how do I know where the springs are? And he was like, you just, wherever it's like, there's ice on the ground, like a frozen patch of ice. And so I started just walking through the park and figuring out where the springs were. To me, it was like this hidden well, right? There's this water. And there already is this history of having springs in the park that were fountains where people would go with jugs of water and fill up their cups and jugs. And so I was interested in bringing that back into the park in a way. So I found a few different possible locations. And the first location that I was interested in was right off the road. And that's the one that I really wanted. I wanted it to be really accessible where someone could just drive up and get out of their car and go see the piece. But it turns out that that site was the start and finish line of a car race that happens every year. And the city was very worried that the artwork would get damaged. So this was the second best site, and it is a short walk. I guess it probably took us like 20 minutes maybe to get here. There's another entrance from this playground, and it's shorter. It's more like 10 minutes. But yeah, it was challenging to decide to put my piece in the middle of the woods. I love the woods. I like spend like lots of my spare time in the woods, but it was definitely a choice. It felt like I was hiding something and making a destination. And then, over the years, the past couple of years after the piece being installed, I keep on meeting people who live in Pittsburgh who are like, I run in the park and I see your piece, or I take my dog out. And so it's like, it really, the more I spent time out here, I realized that lots of people use this trail and use this park, and they feel a sense of ownership to the park. So thinking about like the public of the park, it was much bigger than I imagined. And it was much more of like people felt a sense of ownership about the park, which was really, really cool. So,
the water drinkable?
The water, it would need to be filtered. So that's one thing I was also working with the geologist on. And he told me that we looked at studies. So he had a grad student who was studying all the springs, and she tested all the water. And the major contaminants were, can anyone guess?
Dog,
actually.
And what did you think?
It's actually, it might be lead, but it's basically like from cars, because the road is right above us. Mm-hmm. It's from the brakes. Like people putting on their brakes, and it wears down the metal. And so then the metal runs through the soil, through water, washing off. And so that's in the water. So the water picks up whatever is around.
Is the reason that it's not clean because it's so close? Is it a factor of distance or depth of the spring? Or because I know there are other springs. Mm-hmm. Certainly springs up in Maine that we've drank from that are like the local place to get water.
Yeah.
And tons of people stop and get water there all the time, which is historically,
it's like the best water.
It's so good.